Let's go! Come on, everybody, and let's get to bumping, cause it's thrill, play the time. Baby, Rip City's jumping now.
Okay, Brindle up the middle. Hey!
Come on, everybody.
All right, everybody, welcome to the 383rd edition of the Holy Backboard Podcast. I am Dustin here in sunny Rip City, and I got my man
Sage being the absolute clip farmer. I clipped every draft prospect and put it on social media. Like, my entire weekend was just me editing our yapping for the 45 seconds of, you know, confident speech, and then putting it on social media. I am like now just a content farmer. I realize that is my true goal in life, is just to clip our dumbass thoughts and putting it into the world.
As long as people want to, you know, hop in those mentions and give us some really good feedback, I am all for it.
Or argue about how stupid we are on.
I like the engagement. You are a beast when it comes to this, and hopefully I don't have any more brain farts when it comes to thoughts on the Portland Trail Blazers.
Dude, you know I've had more than two fuck ups in an episode. It's all
that was like next.
Oh yeah, you were level. Bad.
Yeah, that was COVID Dustin.
That was me forgetting who Wes Unseld was, and we having the guessing game of all Washington Wizards centers from the past. Yeah.
But feeling better now, and I am looking forward to this episode. It has been a minute since we've got to talk about this team, and the season is finally over, so we all can rejoice. Year three of terrible basketball done. Hopefully we just have one more left in the tank. The Blazers finished 21-61, and they got a little lottery luck in terms of positioning. The Spurs, they win their last two games of the year, one with Victor Wembanyama against the defending champion Nuggets, where he scored 17 points in 3 minutes, and then they washed the Pistons off the floor. The Pistons did not want to win that game. They wanted to go into the lottery standings with the most ping pong balls, just as they did last year. And the Charlotte Hornets somehow beat a shorthanded Cleveland Cavalier team who could have bumped themselves up in the standings, but they said, no, we want to stay in that 4-5 matchup with Orlando, which might be good for first round prognosis, but that also has Boston. I don't really understand that either, but hey, I am not one to look a gift horse in the mouth. Right now, the Blazers are tied for the third lottery standings, however you want to phrase that, with the Charlotte Hornets. I'm sure once all of the play-ins have been settled that they will do a coin flip, and it will just basically, it will give you a couple of more chances to move up into the top four. But really, the benefit of winning that coin flip is if neither team really moves up, you say, we are third, you are fourth. So if two teams jump you, you pick fifth instead of sixth. If one team jumps you, you pick fourth instead of fifth. You know, you kind of get the gist. It's really, you're just nudging a little bit in front of that other team. And regardless, it still puts Portland in a really good position, because I don't think they can pick really lower than seventh or eighth. And that's if four teams jump them, which would be pretty unrealistic. So either way, you're probably looking at another top five pick, which is solid. At the moment, Tankathon gives Portland just above a 50% chance to land into the top four, and just over a 13% chance at getting into that number one overall slot. And there is a little more business to be handled. The Golden State Warriors, the dynasty, is it over? We're not sure, but the Sacramento Kings definitely put some dirt on that coffin last night, dusting the Warriors in the play-in. And how that pick will work, you have to wait and see what happens in the East, because if a team seeded, you know, ninth or 10th, like the Hawks or the Bulls, kind of pulls a couple of upsets and pushes either the Sixers or the Heat into the lottery, they have better records than the Warriors. So the Warriors would then get slotted up a couple of spots. We can see it in the West. If the Pelicans do not beat the Kings, the Pelicans have a better record. So that would push another slot up for that Warriors pick. So it really could land anywhere between 11 and 14. We'll have to wait until Friday to see where that happens. I've seen folks say, oh, I just wish the Warriors would move up into the top four and we get their top one protected pick in 2025. That wouldn't be a bad scenario, but I don't recall a team jumping up higher than nine into the top three or four.
It's just so unrealistic.
It's definitely like Powerball type of stuff when you look at the odds in terms of draft movement. So likely Portland will get two lottery picks. Before we get into kind of play on the court, let's just kind of dive right into the exit interviews. I listened to Scoot and Shaden's on Friday after the game against Houston. And then obviously they had them Monday morning. And I think there are a couple of takeaways that I had when listening to everyone speak. The first one being there is just obviously Chauncey Billups is coming back for another season, but what's interesting to me is I don't know if he really wants to be here. Like when you listen to Chauncey speak, he wants to win. He wants to go for it. Probably as all coaches do. You only have so much of an appetite for losing. I would say, buddy, you're kind of the reason we are in this position. You took a perennial playoff team and took them over in 2021 and basically caused a complete dismantlement, and now we're starting to rebuild again. So you kind of had your shot, and now this is the job description, which is complete development. And then,
there's 30 of these fucking things.
Beggars cannot be choosers. You have to take this opportunity that you have. And this is the final year of the contract.
Is there any playoff team that is upset about their coaching besides maybe Milwaukee?
Probably just the Bucks. Yeah.
So it's like you're one of one, and there's coaches that have had successes, and you're trying to be a competing team. It's obvious that he wanted this team to be competitive, playing Anthony Simons so many minutes when we were bad, playing Malcolm Brogdon 40 minutes a game earlier in the year. Like, it's obvious that what he wanted to do was not what everybody else in the management of the Blazers wanted to do. They wanted to lose. You knew the deal. But he was pushing these vets to play expanded minutes for no reason for a large portion of the year. So you know he wanted to win. He was trying to push them to win, but the team, the talent on the court, and the basketball ops overruled him from, you know, trying to win
games.
There
was a very big disconnect from the front office to the coaching staff. I would say,
oh, absolutely,
Chauncey Billups probably doesn't look further than his own shadow. And I don't mean that in a negative light. Some people are more in the weeds. I'm in the weeds a lot as in my current job. It's hard for me to set time aside to look at the long-term vision. But Chauncey clearly is not looking at the long-term when it comes to this franchise. He looks at the schedule, says Clippers opening night, how do I just win this one game? And then he takes it one game at a time. How do I just win this one game? Oh, I need to play Anthony and Jeremy ton of minutes, let them go ISO, get them up as much shots as possible. Where you have Joe, clearly, I think, was disappointed in the lack of development, specifically from Scoot Henderson. And an anecdote I have from that is I went to the Pelicans game before I realized I was, you know, not well. I went to the Pelicans game. Thankfully, I did wear my mask. And I get to my car pretty quickly afterwards. And so I'm always able to capture the post-game press conference from Chauncey. And something, he always says something that just makes me raise my eyebrows. And I'm just like, what are we doing here? The first one was right after the All-Star break. It's, we need to get Anthony off the ball so he can play with Scoot. No, that should have been one of your first priorities, knowing you just drafted a pass first point guard. The second, and this was after the Pelicans game, was, you know, after I'm paraphrasing, he said, like, after that Miami game where they lost by 60 again, the only team to lose by 60 plus in a season ever in the history of the league, said, I really need to get Scoot Henderson going. And I just, like, my jaw, like, dropped as I'm driving home. This is a player that you spent the number 3 overall pick, one of the highest draft picks in franchise history, who by all accounts was, you know, in a tier of his own in that draft class, only behind the great Victor Wembanyama. And you're saying just now on game 7, on game 80, 79, that you have to get him going. That should, and this is where the disconnect happens, that should have been priority number 1. This guy is the new face of the franchise. How do we make him comfortable? How do we empower him? How do we put him around the right pieces to make him succeed? Because Sage, as we saw and we documented all season long, he was never put in position to succeed, just like Shaden Sharpe.
I mean, like, Delano Banton was getting more playmaking reps than
Malcolm
Scoot Henderson.
Brogdon was closing out games where he didn't really need to be closing out games. Like, he...
And it's not... Delano and Malcolm's roles is not...
Franchise.
Major decision-maker creator dribbling off the ball. You know, like, when you're starting a new project in anything, but in this, you're like... You're writing out the goals for the project. I feel like Scoot Henderson development is the first thing you write. And if we're being negative, it's the second thing you write after Shaedon Sharpe development. It's one of the first things that you talk about. So the disconnect is just crazy that any logical person would think, all right, we're bad. Let's get this young guy some reps. It's crazy that it takes to game 80. And then he admits it on air where people like you can listen to his thought process of, oh, I failed at 80 times to give him the right role. I'm going to fix it in game 81.
We looked at Shaedon, like how he finished the season as the primary option, getting those reps necessary. He felt empowered, and then he comes in off of the bench. And you're not running any sets from him. He's third or fourth on the pecking order, if we're being honest. And that just, it wasn't engaging for him. He never knew when it was his time. And as a
fourth quarter, when
as
we
a
needed
first and
him
second year
time.
Player, you're looking up at DeAndre and Jeremy and Malcolm and Anthony. Like, you're not going to go in there and just step on a bunch of toes. You're going to fall in line. And that those roles were never really defined. And it sucks that it happened like that. And if you look at Chauncey, I think he could have carved himself a longer tenure with the Blazers had he focused on development, right? And you can point to say, yeah, we lost games, but look how much Scoot improved.
Look at his on-ball reps from game one to game 82.
About a coach that, you know, the book on DeAndre Ayton's been out there. There's not really much to know what gets this guy going, how to use him. He's a great rim runner. He can hit the mid-range shot. Like, he's really effective.
He needs to be
scoring the ball. And it took almost 4 or 5 months for Chauncey to be like, oh, he needs to get more than 10 shots a night. Like, his go-to is just, oh, God, Jeremy Anthony, save us. And that therein lies why I don't think he is an NBA head coach, because there's just simple things. If I'm able to see something, that's a red flag. Like, I'm a diehard fan, but I'm a fan. Like, I'm not a coach. I don't claim to be a coach. But if I notice something that's not happening or is happening that's incorrect, that's huge red flag, Sage. Like, podcasters shouldn't be pointing out things that are going on.
So, in NBA 2K, there's a thing where if you run a play and it's successful, 2K will automatically run it again and again and again. I think that he runs a play until it fails and then never goes to it again. So it's end on failure. I mean, we've talked about Chauncey Billups so much. And I mean, let's talk about Boston. They have some of the best coaches helping them, you know. I just don't think that he put together a competent staff to raise him up, because he is such a newer, inexperienced guy. You should have more experienced guys. Now, saying Scotty Brooks isn't experienced is wrong. He's very experienced at being shitty. He's a very experienced bad coach. I mean, shit, look at some of the stats that he had. Look at some of the players that he had that he failed. I mean, Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook twice, James Harden. Like, he failed with those assets, and then he's putting into a position where we have not as many. And then Roy Rogers had all of the toys in the world in LA Clippers, and then tried to do similar stuff with a way less of a toolbox. So I think he was put his immaturity as a coach plus the staff that's around him, he got put in a really shitty position and never really got his way out from the hole that he dug with the staff. And we're talking like 3 years later, he still hasn't dug himself out of this hole.
And if we're projecting, you know, based upon what Joe Cronin said, like, this, he's not just out there to be a play-in team. He doesn't. I don't think he cares that they won 21 games. I think he wants to see more development, but he knows this team needs more top end talent. Like the cupboard is starting to get stocked, but it needs a lot more groceries and snacks. And, you know, they have two lottery picks likely in this upcoming draft. You can tell by his comments that there's no urgency to go all in to become competitive next year. Like the 2025 class, he has eyes on Cooper Flagg, on Ace Bailey. Like, just even take just a couple of minutes on YouTube and you can tell these players would be easily number one, number two picks in this draft. Probably would be in the top five in most previous classes as well. Like, you start to get, you know, year two Scoot, year three Shaden, whatever lottery picks you get this year, plus, you know, a cream of the crop prospect. And now you start to see that the top end talent is there, and then you can start to win organically. Like right now, I think they're definitely trying to kind of fill the roster with, you know, players that are not going to get it done and
hardworking players that might not have top end talent. Do you feel like our cupboard has a lot of similar things? Like, if we just did play type or archetype, I could say we have like five dudes that are in theory shooters, but really just defensive prospects that might be able to shoot one day.
If like, we're being honest, I think there's four players in the cupboard that are worth keeping, you know, in stock. And that's Scoot, that's Shaden, that's DeAndre, and Tumani. And I think you could add in Rupert in there because we all knew he was going to be raw. So he just needs time, and you're okay with that. But those two are similar.
And then they also had Matisse.
I think that's where the cupboard really stops. Like, I think Chris Murray's been a big disappointment this year. You draft him based upon his ability to spread the floor and shoot the ball. And yes, he does other things well, but you need shooting. Joe talked about this. Like, they want more defenders. They want more shooters. They want more playmakers. The team needs shooters around Scoot Henderson to make his job easier. It's going to be easier for him to take his man off the dribble if everyone else is spread out in the defense. Yeah. The
space, yeah. But we've talked about our lack of shooting for like, well, at least I have for like four or five years.
It's a huge hindrance. It seems like they continue to draft. It's not just athletes. Like Jeremy can shoot and Frank can shoot, but it's also the way you're getting your shots. Like Jeremy early in the season pounding the ball into oblivion. I don't care if he makes a shot. That's a bad shot. Anthony going ISO heavy, not a good shot. Like, it took a long time for this team to start to pass the basketball. And so that's why you need players who can catch and shoot, who can shoot off of movement, who can just space the floor. Like, in theory,
connectors too.
In theory, that's what Chris Murray was supposed to be. And I'm not closing the book on Chris Murray, but I do think that, again, when you looked at the exit interviews, Joe Cronin basically told them, my job is to go find somebody who's going to beat you out. And already you've got Jabari Walker, you've got Tumani Kamara, you've got Ryan Rupert, if we're talking about Chris Murray, and you've got 2 to 4 draft picks coming in. A lot of them
One of them is going to be
heavy, probably. To me, if I'm Chris Murray, I'm like, fuck, you're a first round pick and you've got guaranteed money. This is the season. You get one off season, bud. Like in another franchise, you may get more grace, more time to develop. But when you're on a team that is looking to fill the cupboard, who has a lot of assets, who has a lot of future assets, who has a lot of players at your position, there's just not time to say, we're going to keep kicking the can. Like, you might still be on the roster, but you're either going to be salary filler for a trade, or you're going to just play garbage time, or if somebody gets hurt, because there's a chance that somebody's going to pass you on that depth chart and kind of leave you in the dust. So, you know, no disrespect to Chris, but he figures the shot out, or he's going to be out of the league.
Yeah, I mean, but I think the Blazers, since we've started this, have always overpopulated their roster with the same guy. You see it with Dame CJ Anthony, Norman Powell, very similar prospects, same height. Now with Cronin, 6'6 to 6'8 theoretical shooters that play defense at some level or another. Like, you know, if Tristan Da Silva gets picked up in the late first by us, I'm sorry, Keegan, you're probably going to get replaced.
No. Like, I wish we had Keegan. We have Chris.
Chris. Oh, fuck. My bad. But like, I keep seeing us fall into this trap of like overextending on one thing and then completely negating the other stuff that's wrong with this team. Like the people that say this is a 1 year stop. No, this is like a complete and utter. We're tearing this shit down and trying to build sustainably. And building sustainably is going to take a longer time than just filling in holes and then going all in and then becoming the Blazers of old or Atlanta or another team. If you want to be good for a while, you have to be sustainable. And right now, this team just has a lot of blah.
Yeah. A lot of mid. That's what it's going to be. And I understand fans that are upset. Don't want to watch bad basketball. This season wasn't fun for me to watch either. And I get their fans that just tune in for one game. I want to be entertained. I want to watch a competitive basketball game. And I want to do that every time I turn the game on. I don't necessarily am invested in long-term success or championships. I just turn it on for 2 hours. I want to be entertained. I completely get that. I think for the Blazers, you see right now where you're at. And as an executive with the Blazers, your job is not just to be competitive on a game by game basis. Your job is to win championships, to compete for championships, but by all ends of the imagination. And you look right now, it took 46 wins and the Golden State Warriors were the 10th seed. The Kings were the 9th seed. Mm-hmm. The Kings went from third seed home court advantage last year to now they have to win another game. So they have to win two elimination games just to get into the 8th seed, which is you know, mind-boggling at how deep the Western Conference is. And for all intents purposes, I don't, maybe Utah, you're better than next year. Like, it's you and Utah, because you know there's an alien in South Texas that's going to have the Spurs competing sooner rather than later. And
there's a lot
of really good teams. So if you're Portland, you need as many bites at that lottery apple as possible. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to win with Scoot and Shaden and DeAndre, that's fantastic. That means you're doing something right. The Houston Rockets were doing something right. They were led by Van Vliet, but they had big time production from Jalen Green, third year. Shengun, third year. Jabari Smith, second year. Amen Thompson, first year. They had a lot of players on their rookie scale contracts contributing to victories. They still had some picks from Brooklyn coming in. So it's fine that they're going to be lower in the lottery. Like they're starting to win organically now. Portland's next step is to get to that point. But I still think they're a season away from seeing what they have with Scoot and Shaden. I think they need to make a lot of roster moves to force Chauncey's hand. Like, I think Joe kind of went into the offseason last year thinking we have a good foundation. And the pieces just didn't mesh, right? Like, you've got some good vets, but the pieces don't work. And Chauncey's going to fall back and always be reliant on those vets. So now I think if Joe really wants to see this development, I think he's going to have to, you know, and you listen to him, like when he's calling out Scoot, Shaden, you know, Tumani, Jabari, like DA, like he's not talking about Anfernee in these comments. He's not talking about Jeremy, not talking about Malcolm. Like, I think at a certain point, Joe needs, if he really wants to see this development and they're committed to Chauncey Billups, you might have to force his hand and take away some of his toys and say, no, you're not going to be able to. I'm going to trade Anfernee away. We're going to get future draft capital. I'm going to trade Jeremy away. We're going to get matching salary and future draft capital. You need to play with Scoot, Shaden, and DA. Those are your big three for the next season, and you're going to fill out the roster, and we are going to. I mean, I think a lot of fans would be okay with that if you're watching the team play and you're losing, but you're losing competitively, but you're losing with your young talent. I agree with this with fans that are upset. You're losing with remix players. Like, that's just not fun. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that is injury based. Shaden's been out since January. Scoot's been in and out of the lineup. But I think what made the Roy Aldridge era easy to transition was they played most of their games, right? And they grew organically together. There wasn't a lot of, you know, we're just going to go down to the D League at the time and just like, oh, B-Roy, I'm sorry, you're not going to play. Like, no, they played him. Like, I didn't love the fact that they didn't play Scoot the final game of the year, but that's what they wanted to do. Maybe he was overextended. Who knows? But I get that frustration, but like, we got to strap in because it's going to be, you know, another.
I also think it's just like the expectation that the Blazers gave to the media was just so, yeah, we're going to win together. We're going to lose together. We're going to be together. Obviously, if you look at it now, I don't think together is a word that represents the Blazers at all. When you look at, you know, how people are speaking, I think that the messaging of, you know, initially what it is was a bad move to go with, you know, the togetherness when we were just so fragmented. And I didn't watch the Scoot and I didn't watch the Shaden interviews because I didn't know it was happening until you texted me and then you were talking about Cronin. So I watched the Cronin one and it's obvious that he was talking about Alex Saar being their number one target. Like, it was obvious. They talked about 5 minutes
not having enough data on a player.
So it's either Alex Saar or AJ Johnson. Both of them played in the NBL. I like AJ Johnson, but he is not going to be drafted by the Blazers. So I think that we're talking about Alex Saar. Do you think Alex Saar fits with the core three that we have currently?
I think feel like if you get the top pick in this draft and you have another pick, you're awarded a chance to take a swing. And I think he is the biggest swing. There's a big boom bust variance with Alex Saar. And what you have to look at if you're Cronin is, yes, DA can be part of your big three. So if he fits with DA, he gets an outside shot. He can turn into a Jaren Jackson Jr. type of player. That's fabulous. That absolutely fits with DeAndre. But when you look at the future, and so you're not looking at Alex Saar next year, you're looking at Alex Saar in 4 years. Like you want all of these players to grow together. But if you look next year, you've got six Blazers, all of the vets, Ayton, Jeremy, Ant, Malcolm, Rob, and Tease, making $130 of the $160 million on the team committed salary. That's about 81%. DeAndre is the biggest culprit of that, making $34 million. And then he's got another year at 35 and a half before he becomes a free agent. So my answer to that would be, I don't care if he fits with Ayton. It's great if he does, but as we discussed a few episodes ago, I want to keep DeAndre, but at that price, that's probably going to be too rich. If Scoot and Shaden hit, you're going to have to pay them as well. Like the downside of having so many high draft picks is the salaries start to accumulate, right? And with the first and second aprons now kicking in, it just makes it harder to keep teams around for a longer period of time. So you have to be very cost effective. Obviously, if DeAndre wants to come back in maybe a discount or even on a similar scale and he's producing, you have those discussions. But if he's DeAndre Ayton and says, no, I'm a max player and he wants $45, $50 million, you can't do that. And so you have to have a player in the wings ready to go like an Alex Saar. So in a roundabout way, great if he fits with him, but I honestly don't think it matters. There's plenty of minutes.
What about the other two?
Yeah, Scoot and Shaden is really where it needs to be. And, you know, I think anytime you could get a 7-1 big who can play defense at the rim, on the perimeter,
he's a theoretical shooter, but I believe in his theoretical shooting more than the wings are.
He's a theoretical shooter, and that really scares me because we've drafted a lot of theoretical shooters and I've scouted a lot of theoretical shooters, and a lot of times it just doesn't pan out. But this draft is kind of different. It's an outlier. You have to be willing to bet on your coaching, on your development, on your scouting, on your progress. And I think you're drafting him knowing that doesn't have to be the first, second, or third option scoring. You just need him to improve his rebounding and probably at least start hitting a mid-range shot where DeAndre's at right now. That's going to open up a lot.
I think Scoot Henderson will help him because let's be real, it's Bryce Cotton passing him the ball.
I think Scoot's helped DeAndre just as much as DeAndre's helped Scoot. Yeah. Like he's, and this is why
one of his biggest issues is the fact he doesn't go inside. But if you have a guy that can pass the ball really well,
he'll spoon feed you.
He's one of the more athletic dudes in the league. He's going to catch lobs and score. Like I think that, you know, when thinking about Alex Saar, you need a good passing point guard. You can't do it with, like, you know, Anthony Simons. But if you have Scoot Henderson passing him the ball, I think he'll be more motivated to get into the paint. So I think Scoot and Shaden, he absolutely does fit. DA and he kind of have some similar issues. So I don't think that those two double negatives create a positive. So I think he fits with the other two guys that are way more important. But I don't know. I also don't think Alex Saar is going to be good his rookie year. I think most of these guys are going to suck their rookie year.
And that's okay. Like, not everyone is Wembanyama or LeBron. It's just a matter of fact.
But I think the potential of the potential of Alex Saar, excuse me, I get why Cronin likes him. I absolutely do. Potential is crazy. It's just, do you trust everything else besides our ability to scout players right now? I don't really, with the development and the motivation.
Again, it comes back to taking the toys away from the toy box, right? If there's not, you know, three other vets that are capable of producing this season for the coach to go, you know, call upon, then they're forced into the action. And I think that's where we saw the development last year from Shaden, is when they kind of shut down other players and they said, go. And this is where we've seen Scoot Henderson, who had just, you know, a fabulous month of April. You look at Scoot's April numbers, 7 games, 19.5 points, 42% from the field on a good 17 shot diet, probably a little rich than he's going to have in the next season. But obviously, that's what the role called for. 42% from 3 on 7 attempts. That is incredible. Nobody would have believed that before the season. 80% from the free throw line on 3 attempts. 9.7 assists, 3.4 rebounds, 36 minutes. The turnover is the only hole right there, 5.3 turnovers. But again, anytime you give a 20-year-old point guard the keys to the castle for 40 minutes a night, turnovers are going to happen.
Shit's going to happen.
8 against New Orleans, 9 against Golden State, but just 1 against Houston. So you can see him start to improve there. He also had maybe one of the most aesthetically pleasing plays I've seen ever, coming off of that screen roll, putting his defender in jail, and then just lobbing it up for DeAndre, who just pirouettes into a reverse alley-oop against the Rockets. You see Scoot also get out there in the open court, making a steal and just powering it home over Jeff Green. And everyone was like, where has that Scoot been? And I just want to say to those folks, did you not watch Summer League, and did you not watch the Rising Stars game? Because he had command of both of those situations because he felt free. I think in April was the first time he's really felt free as a point guard with the Blazers, because he knew, I don't have Malcolm over my shoulder who's going to come in for me. Because Chauncey has talked about that time and time again. Like, Malcolm is going to close games. I felt more comfortable with Malcolm. We saw that in the Bucks game in January, that Scoot had a fabulous 13-point first half. He barely played in the second half because Chauncey just had to get that victory, and he felt more comfortable with Malcolm Brogdon. But there wasn't Anthony Simons, another ball dominant guard, you know, taking reps or just, you know, commanding the offense. It was Scoot and DA, and everything else flowed off of that. And that's why he was able to succeed. That's why Brandon Miller had a really good season with the Charlotte Hornets. He was in the starting lineup, especially when LaMelo went down. He was option 1A, 1B with you know, Bridges. Mm.
But he also had a Bridges was there as like a good, willing passing vet. Because of the schematics of our team, we didn't have a good willing passing vet. We had guys that were trying to put up numbers. So, I mean, it was just like how we were taught, how they were taught how to, you know, play this season. Well, just bad for everybody. So when people say, where was that Scoot? I'm like, you're putting, you know, a Ferrari in the garage and saying, we'll put him out in the summer. We're not going to put him out, you know, in the spring. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, he was just put in the worst possible spot with the worst possible play. Like, he was doing well with Chris Murray, Ryan Rupert, and Jabari Walker on his team, not you know, the vets at the start. So it's just been put, Scoot has been put in a really awful situation by
everybody. You know, I think this is going to be a very big summer. I think it's gonna be the summer of Scoot. I you can tell, like,
well, you know, he's gonna go, you know,
he's gonna go into the lab and he's gonna work practice on his left hand. He's gonna work on his finishing. I think he's gonna work on the jumper. And I think, you know, he said something like, it doesn't matter where I'm at. Like, someone just asked, are you going to be in Portland this summer? He's like, it doesn't matter where I'm at. I'm going to be wherever there's a basketball court. I'm going to get some run in, and I'm going to play fives. And he's going to work on the game. And I think if he is empowered, and that is the key phrase, if he is empowered to be Scoot, he's going to have a phenomenal sophomore campaign. I think the expectations for what people had based upon maybe hype, we're going to see them in the sophomore campaign, because overall.
Yeah. He's going to have a really, like, there's going to be certain players in this draft class that just have amazing sophomore seasons where people are like, where was
he's
this
still average? So despite, like, maybe a historically bad opening month to the season, for 62 games, he still gave you 14 points, 5.5 assists, 3 rebounds on, you know, 39% shooting, 33 from three, and 82 from the line. And that's with an historically bad start. And I think when you watch people give out, you know, rookie grades, or he might not even make a second team rookie, like, I just take that with a grain of salt, because everyone is feeding off of the narrative of how bad he was early on. And to compliment him and recognize the improvement, it's just, I guess it's not the cool thing to do.
Well, dog,
negativity wins the internet, unfortunately.
Well, yeah, like, you see how, like, I'm on TikTok a lot, and I see people shit on 2K and shit on Fortnite, and I'm like, all right, where's the positive stuff about those games? Like, I think with now with the media and YouTube and all that, it's like the negativity about, like, hot takes makes the algorithm like you way more than well thought out takes. And that's just kind of where we're at in society. So I mean, if people say he had a bad season, I'm like, sure, but was this season really putting him in a good place? And if you honestly are real with yourself, no, it was a bad year. It, like, context really sucked.
Yeah, and I think if you're a Blazer fan, you feel very encouraged what you saw post All-Star break from Scoot. Just the passing reads, how he passed.
It's gotten, also, he had to work, you know, the G League Ignite was such a bad context, and he was in it for 2 years.
He passed, like, DeAndre open so many times. I mean, he got Jabari so many good looks. Like, he's just so much more confident with the handle. I mean, he just moved different. Maybe a lot of that is coming back, you know, fully healthy. But I just noticed him moving more confidently, and that's it's really good to see. Like, I think Blazer fans need to take that, because Portland's best chance at competing with the Houstons, the OKCs, the San Antonios in the next half decade really fall on Scoot and Shaden and their development. And I know we didn't get a lot of data with those two playing together, but hopefully we get that next season. Speaking of next season, Sage, do you think, and I've seen some theories, and I kind of pointed this out, I was like, earlier on, is like, Anfernee Simons is not a part of this long-term plan. Like, Joe Cronin's not discussing him at all. Do you think, and Anfernee also mentioned, like, I'm going into my seventh year, like, I want to win now, and the Blazers clearly are not in a win now mindset. Do you think he either did, like, a soft trade request, or there's just, like, an understanding of, like, yeah, we're going to look to move you? Because I just don't think him,
I think it's a mutual agreement about where they are as teams,
are in each other's long-term best interests.
Yeah, I don't think that, I think that they're both, as much as we've shit on the Blazers in the last however long we've been recording, Cronin is well aware of where we're at as a team. And I think Anfernee Simons is well aware of what he's been playing like. And he knows if he wants to compete, he's going to have to change the way he plays. But I think that he realizes that losing sucks. And if he can get the opportunity to be on a good team, he'll take it. And I think that they just mutually agreed that if a potential trade happens, he'll welcome it, I think.
Yeah, I think.
And remember what it was like opening day. We saw Anfernee and Jeremy just you know, everything promotional wise. Now it's, you know, Rise With Us with Scoot. You know what I mean? Like, I think that the Blazers have realized this version of Anthony is not going to be a long-term piece of the team. So if we can find like the Orlando Magic, for instance, or the New York Knicks are looking for more scoring and are willing to give you neutral assets for Anthony Simons and his talent, I think it happens.
Yeah, you know, I think there are some teams out east you could target. You mentioned Orlando. They've got the contracts to make it work. You know, John Isaac has only 1 year left on his deal after this year. Carter Jr. Is on a reasonable contract. Obviously, he'd be coming in as a backup, but they've also got, you know, two lottery picks last year that didn't really get a lot of burn. I don't know if Anthony Black...
Did Jet
very, play? Very infrequently.
AB played a little bit, but Jet yeah, really
I mean,
just
they're a team that's now fifth in the East, and I think you'll start to see a lot of owners and front office will make decisions based upon how they see their team in the postseason and how they react and what their deficiencies are. So if Cleveland kind of has their way and the backcourt doesn't get it done offensively from Orlando, like that could be a nice pairing there. Sends Anthony home, get some draft capital. You look at a team like Detroit that probably is tired of being the laughingstock, and clearly Jaden Ivey is not the scorer that would work next to Cade. You know, they've got young talent and the salary that can make that a trade work. So I think we'll see more there. Another interesting take is, where is Jeremy Grant been? Like, a Blazer fan named Kat, who I follow, and I really enjoy following her, she's a very, very nice individual, mentioned, like, where's Jeremy? Like, I haven't seen him on the bench the past few nights. He didn't do an exit interview. He is a dude that is on the books for 4 more years, starting at, you know, almost $30 million next year. He's going to be 30 years old. Like, and this is the second consecutive year that he's been, quote unquote, shut down, probably before April, hasn't played on the winning team since 2020, but he did voluntarily leave to go to Detroit.
Yeah, well, like, he wanted the role. You so know,
it's like that's another interesting scenario, because in an ideal world, Jeremy is, I think, a good bridge. But if Chauncey's going to use Jeremy like Giannis, that's not going to work. Like, you need to use Jeremy as a connector, as a catch and shoot player, not Jeremy, you're our only hope against the Pistons. Everything is falling. Just save us, Jeremy. That doesn't work. So that's an interesting thing. Like, I hope nothing's wrong with his family or in his personal life, but that was interesting that he was not made available to the media.
I mean, you know, life happens, but I don't know what Jeremy wants. Because he left a situation that was really, really positive for him in Denver to have this expanded role. Now that he's 30 years old, does he want the expanded role, or does he want to compete in playoff basketball? That's something that Cronin and he need to discuss. Because if he wants that expanded role, I mean, I could see a future with he being on the team for a few more years, but if he wants to, you know, be on a team, they just need to have that conversation. Jeremy, what do you
want? A lot
of
teams could use a Jeremy Grant type in the postseason right now. If you can get off that contract, get some draft capital. So of those six vets that I mentioned taking up 81% of next year's salary, we got DeAndre, Jeremy, Ant, Malcolm, Rob, and Tease. Who do you think is most likely not going to be here next year? You can say multiple folks. Like, I would say DeAndre is definitely coming back.
I think DeAndre is safe. Honestly, it's like a scale from everyone else.
I think Rob is really safe. They're not going to sell low on Rob.
Fair. I guess, yeah. Do we know how he's recovering from his injury?
I mean, I think everything is he'll be back in time for next season, but I don't think that's been concrete.
Yeah, well, his market is extremely, like, the seller's market for Rob Williams is really low until we prove that he's actually healthy.
I mean, the market
enough
for him
basketball.
Was Houston, basically what they offered for Stephen Adams, and they got 3 second round picks. So you either build that up, yeah, or you know he does have 2 more years left on his deal, and so that could be a mini albatross if he's not able to get back on the court.
Exactly.
So it is a bit of a risk, but I would assume Rob comes back. I think Anthony and Matisse and Jeremy are the three that are probably going to be moved. Maybe maybe Jeremy, that contract is heavy, but I think the way Matisse played, borderline first team all defender, shot hovered around 40% from three all year round. Like any playoff team is going to be willing to trade a 20s pick in the future for a player of Matisse Thybulle's caliber. I think he really built his brand back up after basically not being in Philadelphia's rotation. And I think if you move Ant, I could definitely see Malcolm coming back. I could also see Malcolm being like, I said all the right things. Get me the fuck out of here. Like, I was just...
I think that there's teams that would want Malcolm Brogdon on their team.
There's definitely a market for Malcolm. It's more of like, do the Blazers... You know, that whole messaging of like the whole mentorship was like pushed super hard a few months ago. So who knows what's out there? Because I do think if you do move Ant and you do move Malcolm, you need to have some sort of a veteran or a young veteran presence. Mm-hmm. Just throw Peyton Pritchard, TJ McConnell, Trey or Tyus Jones.
But those are really accessible players.
You just need a backup, a capable backup behind Scoot. Like you can't go into next year with Scoot Henderson and then, oh, we're going to draft Devin Carter from Providence. And those.
Oh, don't
do that. You can't do that. You need some adults in the room. Like if you're going to go, you know, if you're going to try and play raise the flag for 2024, 2025, go for Cooper, you have to have some adults. So they do need.
Do you think if we drafted Devin Carter, his dad can be our assistant head coach?
Is his dad Anthony Carter?
His dad is Anthony Carter.
So.
Yeah. The one thing I was like, oh, that's Anthony Carter's son, who's an assistant head coach with some team.
One player that I would keep an eye on, and this is just looking at the salary and looking at who's expiring and looking at the depth chart and looking at all of the assets we have. I know he's a fan favorite, but it wouldn't surprise me if they see if there's a market for Jabari Walker.
Oh, totally. Like for sure.
He's an expiring deal next year on $2 million. I don't think you're going to want to pay him full mid-level unless he has just a massive breakout year.
Unless we just put the sliders on his three-point shooting all the way up in NBA.
You don't really have a player who does what he does in terms of the effort, the heart, the hustle, and the size. But again, if a team covets him, you have all of these other players. Like that's just something that it wouldn't surprise me.
No, I totally get that. I think any of those wings, if somebody is willing to, it only takes one team. So if one team values any of those wings, we should do it. It's only going to get more hard. It's only going to get more difficult for them to trade these guys. And if you re-sign Barry to a contract, it's going to be even harder. I'm totally cool with most of these players not being on the team. I thank them for being trailblazers and pillars of the community. But if the right trade happens for nearly anybody besides like the big three, I think the Blazers would be foolish not to take the opportunity.
What's your take on Delano Banton? He has nearly a $2.2 million team option for next season. Would you pick it up if you're Cronin? No.
Sure. I mean, it doesn't.
Knowing how limited the roster affordable. Is, like there isn't right now, there's not a lot of roster spots open.
But it could be changed if, you know, Ant and Malcolm or one of them.
So, but I don't know I don't know the deadline on picking up that option, though.
And how old is he? Is he like 30, 24, 25? Or is he older than that?
He's drafted the same year as Shaden, 2022.
But he transferred schools to, like, it was two colleges. It was Western Kentucky and something.
He turns 25 this November.
Again, like if we have a plan for a backup, a fifth guard, I'm totally fine with Lonnie Banton. If that's a plan, sure, cool. I don't. He's reached legend status with some Blazer fans because of his hard work and passing abilities. The contract's affordable. The contract's affordable. I'd welcome him back. But there needs to be a plan. We can't just cut him mid-season just because. So if there's a well-thought-out plan, for the fifth guard being Delano Batten, sure.
Yeah, I would bring him back if there's a role for him scaled down. Like he's just a little.
He's at a maximum.
He's just a little too hot and cold with the full green light, right? We saw over 15 against the Kings from three. The handle needs a lot of work for how much reps he gets. It's too high. It's shaky. But when he does get to a line drive, I feel very confident that he's going to finish the basket with either hand. Like he's got great finishing.
Or he's going to make the pass. He's a well passer. He's a connective piece that is really
cheap. I would probably pour some resources into him, you know, barring like now if it was like we can keep the 14th pick or we can keep Delano Batten, I'm going to keep
the 14th pick. You know the deal.
Like, I know roster spots are tight, but I would lean towards bringing him back, but in a scaled down role. And as long as it doesn't impact
any of the young guys that are good. Yeah, I get it. But it's just about like role and planning. If there's a plan for him, sure. I mean, yo, if there's a plan for any of these dudes other than let's run it back, I'm probably, yeah. You know, like I just want well thought out people making decisions for this team. So it doesn't need to be, as long as there's like a plan of action to use them, sure. 2 million isn't that, like my thing is, if they're making minimum money or cheap money, I don't really care because they're not really affecting anything. So Delano's has his fans. If there's a role for him, I think that he can succeed. He's a good passer, a good rebounder. He's tall. Sure, I'll take him. 2 million isn't
killing me. We talked about kind of Chris Murray being a bit of a disappointment, but I'll have a player, but give me a player who exceeded your expectations this year. Doesn't necessarily mean you like the player or want them on the team long term, but just like this season, who exceeded your expectations?
There's no one that did it for the entire year, but I think DeAndre Ayton in the second half of the year exceeded my expectations of what he could do. Now, there were moments where I was like, this dude doesn't seem locked in. And again, bad context around the team. But the way he played that second half of the year, it made me think, well, maybe Luka was a bad one to pass over, but he is much better than social media and the media portray him to be. I think he gets a raw deal because I think he's introverted, and then the stuff that he says, people take in a bad frame because he's kind of a shy, weird dude. Weird dude being like complimentary. I think he just gets a bad rep for all of the context surrounding him. But if he can grow up and be an adult, I think he would be. He exceeded all of my expectations. Like, you know, when he talked about the ice storm and people were shitting on him, I couldn't go to my garbage can in my apartment complex because it was so icy.
Also, we're not talking about a playoff game here. We're talking about a game in January for a team that didn't want to win the game.
Dude, we had tickets to that game and I was like, I'm not fucking going.
It was against the Brooklyn Nets. Like, no.
Yeah.
Who cares? Right.
Also, like, he's 7'2". I don't know if he has that confidence in himself to like in getting the whole bed situation. He seems like a shy dude, so if they gave him a time frame of 6 months, I don't think he's going to be, bro, here's 5 extra G's, make it in 2 weeks type of shit. I think he has a lot to learn in life, but I think that second half of the year gave me faith that he overdid what I was expecting.
I'd say if I was grading the Blazers, there would be two players that would get A-minus grades, and they'd be the top graded Blazers. Just from my expectations of what I thought they were and how they performed. One is, I talked about Matisse Thybulle. I thought his off-ball defense was incredible this year. He was a much better shooter when he just caught and catch and shoot. When he tries to do a little bit of stuff off of the break, that's where it started to break down. Movement broke down, but when he hit catch and shoot, you felt confident that it was going in. He returned to that all defensive form, and I think Portland rebuilt his value. Like, he at $11 million is a steal, and I don't think they're going to have any problems extracting a first-round pick out of Matisse. The other player is Malcolm Brogdon. Like, early in the season, he went a little off the rails in terms of the usage and his shot selection, but then he calmed down, closed out games, whether you wanted him to or not. But there was a point in time where he was our best player. And there was also a point in time where we did not win a game when he was not on the, didn't suit up. Mm. Like, he came in and lived up to that sixth man of the year billing, was just a professional scorer, professional teammate, took Scoot under his arm. And you saw, like, early in the season when they were quote unquote trying to win, you saw the impact that when he was out there, like, he
was our most efficient scorer, even when he
just
was,
had the, you could just sense a calming nature around the team when he was out there. So those two players were better than I had anticipated this year. And
even when Malcolm Brogdon was wilding, he was still like one of the most efficient scorers in the NBA. Yeah, his possessions and the time he dribbled the ball was wilding, but when he takes shots, they went in at a much better rate than anybody else on that team. So I know, like, role was bad for him, but, like, he needed to take those shots because our offense was ass for most of the year. So he needed to take those shots. It was the most efficient, like, Jeremy Grant, when everybody else but he and Shaden were out, he was one of the most efficient players. And before that, when Malcolm Brogdon was doing his thing, he was one of the most efficient players in terms of, like, point per possession and, like, true shooting. Like, we kind of needed these guys to chuck to even be remotely close in the games. And Chauncey Billups wanted that goal to be a thing. So we gave it to the efficient guys. So, but yeah, I mean, we knew. The only worry with Malcolm was, is all those injuries made him not athletic enough to play. But he's proven that he's still on that edge of being just athletic enough to do everything that needs to be done.
Two more questions for you before we wrap this recap up. One is Blazer related, one is not. I'll get to the non-related one first. I don't remember who you picked preseason. I think you picked Boston. I had Milwaukee.
You had Milwaukee
over Denver. Give me your finals pick now that you've kind of seen most of the seeding. I'm going to take Boston to win it because I think path is the easiest, and Giannis's health is up in the air. Embiid has just now returning. They're going to have something.
I think it's Boston versus OKC.
You think OKC's going to get the finals?
I want OKC to make the finals because if I enjoy the way Shea and Chet play, but I think Boston's going to win because they have a very solid five. Derek White playing so well. The coaching staff, obviously, I love. I really don't want Charles Lee to go to Charlotte because I want him to be in Portland. But I think coaching and Boston's depth is the reason why I think they're going to
win. I think it'll be Denver and Boston. I'll go Boston because I think Denver's just going to be completely gassed by the time they get to the finals. Yeah. I mean, Denver's potential route to the finals is disgusting. They have to play the Lakers. I know they swept them last year, but every game was down to the wire. They have to play the winner of Phoenix, Minnesota, and I think Phoenix is going to get out of that because they just have too much top end talent. So then you got to go up against Book, Beal, and KD for a 7-game series, and then you're looking at OKC or the Clippers or a Dallas team like that. That is just one of the more difficult roads to the finals that I can remember. And then I just think Boston's just, they're going to be chilling. I think it would be a catastrophic fumble if the Celtics don't win it, given how dominant they've been at home. They've only lost 4 home games all year. They won 64 games. They're going to have defense. A very easy path to the finals. Blazers related question that I asked.
I think Drew's going to put whoever the lead ball handler is in a fucking tizzy.
Yeah, I mean, they revamped their entire offense, their entire team. They moved off Marcus Smart. They moved off Brogdon and Rob Williams. but Porzingis gives them a different element. Derek White, now they're seeing what Peyton Pritchard had. Pritchard puts up big numbers when he gets an opportunity. And they basically, like, Joe sold the thought to the Bucks that, hey, you need this scorer in Lillard. And then he turned around and sold what some people could say is a partial kryptonite in Drew Holiday to the biggest competitor. So that's kind of funny when you think of it like that. But yeah, the Celtics have the recipe to get by really any team in the Eastern Conference. But
it's health defense. It, like, if Kristaps gets hurt or if someone major gets hurt, then then it's an issue. But if health, I they're the betting favorite for me.
But I've also seen the Bucks become betting favorites in the past and losing the first round or losing the, you know, the, so it does.
And then they had to help Giannis and when they were
Miami dusted them. I mean, they've had, yeah. So that's why they play the games, but I'm looking forward to the postseason. Last question. Let's say the Blazers get the number two pick. You can't trade up. You can't trade out. And let's say the other pick is 13, but it doesn't really matter in this scenario. Number two pick. The number one team takes Alex Sarr. Who are you taking at number two? You have to take a player.
I'm so underwhelmed by this decision that, like, I will say Rishi Shea today, but I want to go and watch all the Ron Holland tape.
Ron Holland needs to also officially measure, because if he's 6'8", that changes. If it's 6'6", I'm sorry. Like, it makes a difference when you're playing power forward or the wing.
Yeah, like, with all of the stuff today, I would say Rishi Shea, but, like, I want to watch as much G League tape as I can. If Ron is there, I watched some of his tape, like, March. I was like, damn, he's really toolsy. So I want to watch him again without any bias about him, because first part of the season, I thought he was mid at everything. But I want to watch him with a clear mind. So today I will say Rishi Shea, but if Ron measures well, I wouldn't be mad at a Ron Hollins pick.
Yeah.
We just have to get a shooter with that
13. Yeah, like, to be completely transparent, Dalton Connect's my guy. Like, he's probably number one on my board or two. Like, he's I think he's gives everything the Blazers need, but there is the chance that he's available at 13, or you could move up from 13 to 10 and get him. Like, taking him at two is bad value.
That's bad expected value.
So you have to manipulate the draft in that way, and you have to, you know, you have two picks, so you can take a swing and then go a little bit safer with Connect.
I think that a Ron Holland Dalton Connect draft would be a very nice success.
And also, Cody Williams is slipping. I'm high on Cody, but he's slipping in these mocks as well. So he's another player that could be available. So then, yeah, it really does come down to, and you're not going to pick Reed, you're not going to pick Rob, you're not going to pick Topic. I don't think Stephon Castle fits what you need.
I love the way you did pronounce Castle's last name. Castle, it's a little different.
So then, yeah, you really are left with Zachary Risacher and Ron Holland. And spoiler alert, our next Future Friday will be Zachary Risacher. And he's the ultimate, like, you watch his highlights and you're like, oh, fuck yeah, this guy is easy top five. But then you actually watch, like, the clips where he misses or he's just making, like, making decisions, and you're just like, I don't know. Like,
he's underwhelmed. Like, I liked him, but there was a lot of
drafting,
like,
players potential that are, oh yeah, this guy's a shooter, look at the shot, and you're like, I see the percentages, this guy can't shoot, and you see the misses,
the free throw percentage is a
big
trash
indicator. So it's like, you're really banking on this guy hitting a skill that's harder to develop than most people want to admit.
I mean, yeah, like, if we got two, obviously I'd be hyped. And if Sarr goes, yeah, I mean, that sucks. I think he probably would be number one in most cases, unless I'm drafting for the Spurs and they only have one pick.
And again, somebody may fall. This is just my scenario. Like, somebody may be like, oh, I want the two, I'll trade up and you can get better value.
It only needs one team to make
this
that trade
scenario
out, right?
Is no, you got to make the pick. Yeah, I think you either go Risacher or Ron Hall. It's Ron Holland for me if he measures out at 6'8". It's Risacher if he doesn't.
I think that either way, if I was to make the decision, I'd be like, fuck, what if the other option is better? What if the other option is better? I'm kind of just like, I was trying so hard to not have Alex Saar be my number one because his warts aren't as bad as the other players in this draft. And I'm like, fuck, I'm just seeing the forest for the trees. Alex Saar is number one. I don't need to be cute. He's the number one prospect. And then I can, you know, he's try the number and one think prospect, logically.
But very likely about. Bust. That's just the nature of this draft.
The movement ability still makes me like, but I'm just thinking about Marvin Bagley moving just same tier.
Yeah, I did not think I did.
I think his archetype has a better chance of succeeding than everybody else's archetype. But again, it's not a perfect draft. It's not even close to a perfect draft. But this is where we're at, and with two
bites of the apple, picks right? You got to make that. Got to make it count. You got to hit on at least one of them. You know, we saw in 2012, you hit on Dame, you missed on Myers. You live with it because you hit. You got to hit on at least one of these picks. We saw in 2017, you had three picks. You get Zach Collins and Caleb Swanigan, you know, RIP, but you missed on both. Like, you have to at least hit on one of those picks. So this is where.
I remember loving Biggie Swanigan at Purdue. I remember talking about him on this podcast because he was so impressive.
Wasn't made for the modern NBA.
Yeah, well, you know what? I fall in love with those thick, power thick forwards. Boys. Yeah, they have to be able to pass. Travion Williams had the passing ability. I was not just falling in love with thick power forwards. They had to be able to pass. But yeah, thank you everybody who listened to the podcast this year. We appreciate all the love. There definitely will be more draft-centric podcasts coming up. We got the Zachary Richichet. I'm going to do a podcast on Khalil Ware from Indiana. My God, the Indiana guards are fucking trash. But Khalil Ware will be out this week. And then next week we'll do some Zachary Richichet. So a lot of draft content will be out. Thank you for listening. Another year of the Holy Backboard content. We appreciate everybody. Peace. I am hungry. It is lunchtime. Peace, man.
Wherever you may be, this is Bill Shinley. Good night, everybody. Let's go.